10 years of OK Radio repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
All right, it's a live radio show. Good evening. Walter M. Sterling coming up. Why malls are closing. The real reason.
There's an old guy who's on the air, and they call him Sterling. The bosses hired him on a dare, and they call him Sterling. Kind of hip, kind of odd,
Sterling.
Kind of smart, kind of strange,
Sterling.
A different show that's here to stay, and they call it Sterling.
Sterling every damn night.
I'm hearing so much about Somalia. Let's admit that you and I know nothing about Somalia, and it's time for a social studies lesson about Somalia. I'm hearing so much about Somalia. People are aware of Somaliland, and many do not support its independence. Well, I don't care about its independence. What I care about is, should I go there? There's a Somalia travel advisory. Pirates are active in the waters off the Horn of Africa, specifically off the coast of Puntland. Violent crime, many travel alerts. There are approximately 20 million people who live there. The median age is very young. It's only 15. What? And approximately 47% of the population is under the age of 14. Approximately 51% of the population is 15 to 64. Well, that's odd. What about the unemployment rate? It is estimated in Somalia the unemployment rate is 18.8%. The youth unemployment rate, oh, this must be why they leave, for 15 to 24-year-olds, is 33%. So 33% of 15 to 24-year-olds in Somalia don't work. What about women's rights? You know, these angry women from Somalia who come here and they're angry women. Gender equality and women's rights are major challenges in Somalia, which ranks low on the global gender equality indices. The situation is complex due to a blend of formal legal systems, Sharia law. Oh, yes, Sharia law is there. And traditional customary law that often restrict women to stay at home and to take care of the family. A high percent of women are married as minors. This is in Somalia. Now, remember, when Somalians come to the United States of America, they bring these traditions with them. A high percent of women are married to minors, as minors. 45% of women between the ages of 20 and 24 were in a union before they were 18. So 43% of young women were actually married before they were 18. Now, what about health care for women in Somalia? Women of reproductive age face barriers to sexual health services, with only a small percentage having their need for family planning met by modern methods. Oh, and about being at work, women are more likely than men to be in vulnerable employment. What does that mean? Is show business? Lacking formal work arrangements and social protections, legal and judicial. Well, what about when they get to court? What about these women, these Somalia women who have come here and imposed their legal system and their beliefs on us? Well, the legal and judicial system in Somalia for women, the absence of women within the judicial system, only two female judges out of 295, and differing interpretations of legal regimes pose additional challenges to women. There are only two federal judges in Somalia who are women. What about education in Somalia for women? Deficits in education are a major issue, with fewer than 30% of school-age children attending primary school. Fewer than 30% of school-age children go to school. 30% of school-age children go to school. That's it. That means what? 70% don't. It's a dump. What a crappy place. Now, let's say you want to move to us, to Somalia. Let's say you want to go to Somalia. You want to immigrate there. Well, here's how it goes. You have to live there for 7 years. Live there. You have to have caused no problems, no crime, no trouble, no challenges to the government, none of that in Somalia. But my favorite is, and if you wanted to become a Somalian citizen, you'd have to have a valid passport. But my favorite, and this is true of almost every country in the world, except us. Almost every country in the world says the same thing Somalia says. You must demonstrate proficiency in the native language. You have to be able to talk Somaliese. We're talking about Somalia because there's too much talk about Somalia. I'm tired of hearing about Somalia. I don't care. I don't care about the fraud in Missouri. And the reason I don't care is not that I don't care. It's that it's abstract. If they solve all of the problems in Missouri, Minneapolis, Mississippi, whatever it is, if they solve all those problems, are we going to get checks? There were, what, $5, $6 billion in federal funds stolen from us? And when they get it back, are we going to get a check? Here are the rules about becoming a Somalia citizen. You ready? Here's how you can become a Somalian citizen. Minimum of 7 years continuous legal residency. You must know Somali or Arabic. You must be able to speak a working knowledge of Somali or Arabic. You must have demonstrated good civil and moral character. You have to be willing to renounce and give up foreign citizenship. Maybe you can have dual citizenship. Unclear. The Constitution of Somalia allows Somalis to hold other nationalities despite older laws. So they have all kinds of problems with their laws. Somalis lack a strong institutions that can make the processes complex. So they don't just have bureaucracy like we have. They don't really have a bureaucracy. And therefore, it's like you go to a guy who may know a guy, right? The self-declared region has separate legislation granting citizenship to descendants of those residents in 1960. So if you're a descendant of somebody who lived there in 1960, you get to be a Somalian. Travelers need passport, photo, itinerary, and payment for entry. Wow. All right. You have to know Somali or Arabic. You got to know Arabic if you want to live there. And you have to live there for 7 years to become a citizen of Somalia. And if you're a woman, good luck. And only 30% of kids who live in Somalia get to go to school. There you have it. That's the culture that Somalis are bringing us. Thank you. Walter M. Sterling, good evening. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi, I'm retired Detective Vic Ferrari. And on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, find out what happened to the diner owner who tried to commit insurance fraud, coming up in moments on Sterling. Every damn night.
Champagne room expenses. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night. Just not a professional. Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
Florida stories. It's the wildest, weirdest, stupidest, grossest, funniest, sexiest stories from Florida. I'm James Parker. Florida stories is coming up on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies live on Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every night with the cop.
Of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I'll tell you a story about how I stopped a guy from committing insurance fraud. Vehicles are stolen for different reasons. For the most part, it's for their parts. Some cars are stolen to change the VIN numbers for resale. Others are fraudulently reported as stolen so the owner can collect on the insurance money. Oftentimes, someone just doesn't want to pay their car lease or they can't make their payment and the bank won't take the car back. So what do? They either set it on fire or they report it stolen and hopefully it gets stripped before it is found. So one day I was working in the Bronx in the Gun Hill Road section. My partner and I were driving around looking to grab a cup of coffee. And there was one of these storefront shipping companies. And what these places do is they drop off a shipping container for whatever country it's going to. And the container is filled with things from different clients. So one person might be shipping refrigerators. One person might be shipping a car. Oftentimes, these containers are filled with a lot of things. And what thieves will do is they'll put a stolen car in the front of the container, drive it all the way into the back. Then they'll start filling it up with things like mattresses and refrigerators and all sorts of things going to these poor countries. So it takes the cops and customs. They won't go through the trouble of looking through the entire container. So one day as we're looking for coffee, I see this car getting loaded into a shipping container. It was a Mitsubishi Montero, and it had New York plates on it. Now, why would someone ship a car overseas with New York plates still on it? So I ran the plate. Car came back to somebody in the neighborhood, but it wasn't reported stolen. What I found odd was, who would ship a car with a New York State license plate overseas? Because you have to return your plate to, when you're done with the car, you got to return the plate to Department of Motor Vehicles or they'll cancel your insurance. So I start talking to the shipper and he says, I don't know. What do you want me to tell you? Here's the guy's name. He's shipping the car to Greece. I said, Greece. So I guess the guy that owned the shipping company must have called the owner up, and the guy owned a diner about two blocks away. He pulls up in a huff and a puff. He goes, well, what's the problem? I go, you're shipping a car to Greece with the plates on it. And he started getting nervous and he goes, well, yeah. He goes, it's going to go there for the summer. I'm going to use it and then I'm going to bring it back. I go, you're going to ship a car to Greece with your New York State license plates on it. I says, let me tell you what I think you're going to do. I think you're going to ship this car over to Greece. And once it's over there, you're going to report it stolen. You're going to collect on the insurance money and you're going to have a car in Greece and you're going to have a car in New York. And the guy just looked at me and didn't say anything. And I said, well, here's the deal. Now that I've got your license plate, I'm going to keep running it. And if it comes back reported stolen, I'm going to go to your diner and I'm going to lock you up. Guy didn't say a word. Car came out of the shipping container, and about a week later, I saw it parked in front of his diner. So he wound up not reporting it stolen. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Behind the Blue Wall of Silence.
Happy holidays from Sterling every damn night.
All right, it's 10:25 on the East Coast. And oh my God, here is Mark, who has written this book about Johnny Carson. And it's the most remarkable book ever because you interviewed 400 people.
400 people, Walter. I still can't believe it.
Neither can they. And the title of the book?
Love Johnny Carson, because so many people I talked to said they loved Johnny Carson. People like Mel Brooks, who was on Johnny's very first show in 1962. People like Carol Burnett. Everybody wanted to share their stories. Not only the comedians, someone like Jimmy Buffett wanted to talk to me because he said, Mark, it was the biggest break of my career and no one's ever asked about it except you. And they just wanted to tell these stories. We chronicle Johnny's Tonight Show from 1962 in New York to 1992 in Burbank. And those 30 years were magic.
How angry a drunk was he?
He would talk on the Tonight Show about his problems with drinking. And he would say, he would admit this. Some people, when they drink, he would say, would get fun, would get loving and fun. And he would go the opposite. And he would want to fight the room. It was ugly. You didn't want to be there. He would say he would have one drink too many. He would turn into Attila the Hun, wouldn't remember it. And Ed McMahon had to babysit him many times and get him home in New York. And it was just a struggle. I mean, was arrested, actually, for drinking and driving in 1982, and that's what really did get him his drinking under control.
I don't think it got under control. He used to say, I don't drink anymore because I get angry. I'm a bad drunk. And then 6 months later, we had a story about him being drunk. I don't think he ever got it under control. And I think if you have that problem, you never get it under control unless you stop.
Yeah, it was tough because he'd go out to public at restaurants and people would constantly be sending over drinks to him. And then he was just having wine for a while. But it was definitely a struggle. And in 1971, I mean, he was at Jilly's, and that's Frank Sinatra country, and he had way too much to drink, and he was drunk, and he didn't remember it, and he hit on crazy Joe Gallo, the mafia. He was in the bathroom, and he did something inappropriate to his girlfriend, and Gallo put a hit out on Johnny's life, and the drinking got him in trouble many times, and Sinatra is the one who had to sit down with Gallo and beg for a reprieve, and he got it. I mean, Sinatra saved Johnny's life. Johnny did not want to do the Reagan inaugural, didn't want to MC it. He didn't really want to do anything with politics. But Sinatra is producing this, and he owes Sinatra literally his life. So Francis Albert Sinatra asks Johnny to do something, he's going to do it.
The name of the book?
Love, Johnny Carson.
Love, Johnny Carson. The reason I keep asking things like that is we're on the radio, and there are no chyrons, there are no graphics. No one says, hold up the book, please, Mark. Please hold up the book. And it's not NPR, so I'm not going to sit here for an hour and a half and repeat the name of the book twice in an hour and a half. I'm going to repeat the name of the book twice between the time you get in your car and the time you get to the 7-Eleven, because welcome to commercial radio. Now, Mark, I'm going to ask you two questions in just seconds.
Yes.
We always hear about the people he banned from the show, like Rich Little and people he secretly didn't
That's
like.
Right.
I want to know about the ones he wanted to overbook. I want to know about the one or two that he absolutely loved having on the show. And I'm going to ask you. It's not NPR.
Sure.
I hope you've never had to do an interview with them. I mean, with Diane Rehm.
I have. I've been on NPR a bunch of times, but it's been a while.
Here's my imitation of NPR. Ready? Oh, Mark, yes. Mark, can you tell us any amusing stories about Johnny and Joe Biden? Oh, my God. All right. Hold on, Mark. Don't go anywhere. Mark has written a great book that's fascinating. 400 interviews with Johnny Carson. Can you imagine that about Johnny Carson? And he'll tell us about the book, and he'll tell us about why it'd be a great Christmas gift. Rarely do I talk about books because I know you don't read. I don't read. Who needs any of that? Walter M. Sterling, good evening. I have an email. It's Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. What is this? What? It's a live radio show. Sterling every damn Sunday. Mark Malkoff has written the definitive book about Johnny Carson, but who cares if it's definitive? We care that it's full of great gossip. Mark Malkoff, Johnny Carson, were there guests that he really wanted to have on much more?
Yes, people like Rodney Dangerfield, he wanted on all the time, but Rodney would not go on Carson's show unless he had 50 killer jokes. Most comedians would come on and do 25 jokes. Rodney was a powerhouse. Rodney would do stand-up, 25 jokes, sit down with Johnny, another 25. And he was just such a powerful force. Buddy Hackett, Don Rickles, another two. It was a night off for Johnny. I mean, Johnny was doing an hour and 45 minutes. Then it went down to 90 minutes. And the guy was just exhausted. So to have someone like that or Robin Williams, it was a night off for Johnny, and the audience loved it.
Which proves the key reason he was a success. He did not compete with the comedians. He gave them a stage.
That's right. There are some late night hosts that try to up-one the comedians. And Johnny wasn't like that. Johnny was nurturing the younger comedians, especially. He would stop by their dressing room. He would help them out with their jokes. He was secure enough to have someone like David Letterman guest host the show. He definitely, from the people I talked to, were wonderful. You know, in retirement, after he retired, Gary Shandling and Jerry Seinfeld called Johnny up, and they wanted to take him out to a dinner just to pay homage. I mean, to this day, all of them still say that's the best time of their life. And Seinfeld to this day says it's the biggest break of his life. It's the most special time, not his sitcom where he made a gazillion dollars. It was that first Carson.
Mark Malkoff, what's the name of the book?
Love Johnny Carson.
Love Johnny Carson on Amazon and other fine booksellers. Great Christmas gift. Love Johnny Carson. Mark Malkoff, who has a, must be a spectacular wife, Mark. That's all I can say. Thank you,
Christine's
my friend. Thanks for being
on. She helped me out a lot.
You're really a lucky guy, especially with those glasses. Thank you for being on Sterling every damn Sunday night. It's 10:40 on the East Coast with Walter Sterling. What? We have to talk to Mateus? All right, let's do that.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
Mateus Boom Boom, who's in Hollywood, a Hollywood fixture by now, much like measles. Welcome, Mateus.
Hi there. How are you?
Do other critics respect you and know you?
Some do. Some think I'm beyond the pale because I never seem to agree with what's popular.
And yet that's why I, as a known contrarian and misfit, like you. That's why I like you, Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood. Mateus, would you please share with us your deep thoughts about this week's movie offerings?
Well, I'd be happy to, and especially I want to focus on those films opening in Somalia today because they are also open. Did you know that Somalia, because this has been a great educational program about Somalia tonight, actually had a burgeoning film industry before 1991. However, they had a civil war in the 90s, and that pretty much put the kibosh on all movie-making activity there, although it's trying to come back. They even called their filmmaking community, get this, it's not very original, Somaliwood. I'm not making this up. Anyway,
they have never recovered from that civil war in 1991.
That's right.
It is a decimated, dangerous country that ever since then, our State Department has said, don't go there. There's been a travel advisory against Somalia since 1991.
And very few of their films are coming over this way, too. So
it's not a fair exchange.
No, not in the slightest. Anyway, well, that's what's going on. Although I understand they do have first-run theaters that are operating there. They are currently showing, because I started investigating this at the top of the hour, they're actually showing, movies like Wicked and Tron Ares, which we had a few months back and talked about on this show. So they're actually showing first-run American product right now. Who's watching it? I don't know. I don't know how big they are. I don't even know if they're showing Blu-rays on small little TV monitors. The state of the Somalian theater business is not something I've investigated, but because of this show, I'm now curious about it. So I'll find out. I won't go in person, however, because the State Department has so directed. Well, there's a movie out now called Merrily We Roll Along. This is based on the Stephen Sondheim popular Broadway show. Well, I'm not going to say popular because it was kind of a flop for Sondheim when it came out, although it is constantly revived on Broadway. Sony Pictures Classics decided to make a filmed version of a stage show from last year. which starred Daniel Radcliffe, who is the biggest name in the picture. And he plays one of the two, or rather one of the three principal characters that primarily have, one of them is a, not Radcliffe, but another actor, plays a part of a very successful producer who's made a movie and a show. But he seems to have stepped on everyone along the way to get to the top. And so this story tells the story of these three creative people that have worked together, going back in reverse order to from their tattered relationships now to their more hopeful beginnings, with a lot of very difficult to sing Sondheim material, which I've never liked. And I think the only people that do like it are actors that like challenging material. I like to be entertained, and I don't like to be challenged, and so it's just not my cup of tea. But people who are into acting and want challenging performances, they'll probably love it. So there you go. That's Merrily We Roll Along, a film version of a Broadway stage show by Sondheim, constantly revived on Broadway, who knows why, and now in movie theaters.
Stephen Sondheim, in all the interviews I've seen of him, was a very unhappy man. He didn't like anything he did. He was never set. When you just said now, didn't surprise me a bit, that it was revised many times on Broadway. Merrily We Roll Along. It was revised many times on Broadway. You don't know why. Why was probably because he never liked any version of anything he did. I was stunned that the song that he disliked most of his career was from West Side Story was Someday. Someday from West Side Story. He was handed the music by, Leonard Bernstein. He was handed a Leonard Bernstein composition. He was told to write the lyrics. He never liked the way any of the words hit, any of the notes. And then he'd sit down with you and review what he didn't like. I mean, he just kept himself in a state of misery. Meanwhile, you and I would listen to 90% of the Sondheim songs with our mouths hanging open, go, that is the best thing I've ever heard. That's so incredible. You know,
sure. Especially in that particular show. the ones he disliked the most are the ones I seem to like the most.
And he'd complain that song was dated. It was from the 50s. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. So I can see how he never got happy. However, he did have a home that you and I would kill for. He had a townhouse in Murray Hill, New York, in the Murray Hill District, like at 30th Street, a townhouse that he bought like in 1958 for probably $50,000. Probably could have sold it for $6 million. Probably his estate sold it for $6 million. And he should have just been thrilled about that, Matthias Boom Boom. How do we find you on Facebook?
It's Matthias Bombal's Hollywood on Facebook, Walter. That's MATIASBOMBAL apostrophe S, Hollywood, like the city, on Facebook, Matthias Bombal's Hollywood.
And I want to give you a homework assignment that you don't want. You ready?
Okay, sure.
I want you to figure out how to be on this show during the week. One night, one time, one shot during the week. Will you work on that for me, please?
I'll do that.
All right, Ace. Matthias Boom Boom Hollywood on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Champagne room expenses. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Florida stories. It's the wildest, weirdest, stupidest, grossest, funniest, sexiest stories from Florida. I'm James Parker. Florida stories is coming up on Sterling every damn night.
Just not a professional. Details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
Lesbians in space. Sterling every damn night.
You know, lesbians are like bees. If you don't bother them, they won't bother you. But also, if they all die, the world ends.
Happy holidays from Sterling every damn night.
These are pretty normal jingles for a pretty psycho show. We're flirting with normalcy there. I don't know how I feel about that. But I do know that I remember my childhood landline phone number, but I do not remember most of my passwords that I created today. 763-1888. And ever since then, I have been driven by the number 8. But I remember my landline from childhood. And I would give most of the wealth from my childhood to getting a landline today. I hate these cell phones. And you're not even allowed to say it. Well, you should get a better one. I have the best one. Why? Because I'm on the air and I can deduct it. Harry, I can deduct it. Stop with the nonsense. The fact is that I don't know why I can't get a landline. They sunsetted them, which meant that when the last person in my home left with the landlines could not be activated again. And worse than that, the two or three last homes that I've lived in have had spectacular landline installations. They had a jack in every room. Do you remember what it used to cost to get a damn jack installed? Oh, I want to know. Oh, please, Mr. Phone Company, could I please have another jack? Please. You want another jack off over here? Yes, please, could I? Oh, no, that'll be $400 install and an additional $89 a month. What they used to, I'm going to tell you something that your great-grandparents could tell you and confirm. This is what my great-grandparents told me. And it's why the phone system was busted up. It was this sort of crap. If you wanted a color phone that is not black, you wanted it red or green or gray or yellow princess phone. I always wanted a green phone. If I wanted a green phone, do you realize they would charge us more for that a month? They would charge us $15, $25 more a month just for a color, plastic color phone, a plastic dye made out of a color rather than black. We charged more for that. And the most outrageous one was if you wanted extra cord with the receiver connected to the phone, so you could walk around the kitchen, a wall phone, and then you wanted an extra cord, 15-foot cord, so you could walk around the kitchen. That was another $30 a month. It was those little things that got the population so ticked that they demanded another phone company, that the AT&T monopoly would be busted up. Just to get rid of all of that crap. That's what it was. That Judge Green, is he still alive? He was the one who busted it up. And the first long-distance service that was not AT&T was MCI. And it changed the world. For the first time ever, Americans had a choice of phone companies. And then there were, oh my God, the litigation, the problems. What about the last mile? The last 100 feet, the distance from the pole to the house, who owned the phones, who owned the phones that were already there. It was an endless mess. And they made many, many baby bells. But they still had to be connected to AT&T. How about that? But that changed the world. However, today, with all the advance in technology, for some reason today, I can't get a landline. And I want a landline. I want a, quote, home phone. Don't you? Here's my phone number, 855-839-1210. I'm live on KMOX, WPHT, KDKA, I think, WGAN, Paul Vandenberg's incredible station in Albany. Hello, Paul. Congratulations on your anniversary, Paul. Run the third hour, Paul. 855-839-1210. And you and I can talk about the horror show that I can't get a landline. And then today is National Pretend You're a Time Traveler Day. Pretend you're a time traveler day. What would I do if I was a time traveler? I'd do two things. I'd make sure I didn't lose the landlines. I'd make sure whatever I had to do to keep the landline, I would. They're not really making your grandma give it up, but when she gives it up, they're not going to replace those landlines. But the thing that I've always wondered, what I've always wanted to do, the reason I've wanted to go back in time, besides to meet Yvette Mimieux, look it up, is I wanted to see Egypt the day the first stone for the pyramids was laid down. I want to see that. I want to be there at that moment and say, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? How are you going to move these? With sound waves? You really think that sound wave thing is going to work out? That's what I'd love to do. I'd love to go back in time to see the first day the first stone was laid out for the pyramids. To me, that'd be fascinating. What do you think? 855-839-1210. Let's you and I talk live Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, as we drive home from the long weekend, headed toward the third shift, the great shift, Kazoo playing songs in just seconds.
Here's a story about Sydney Sweeney, who looked hot in an ad for some jeans. But then the usual suspects started complaining about what the ad actually means. They said it promotes white supremacy because
Walter M. Sterling, 8 minutes past the hour, 8 minutes past the hour. Tony.
Tony, how are you, sir?
Tony in Philadelphia.
Don't disrespect the pizza parlor.
Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. Hi.
I listen to you every night almost.
I'm sorry, really?
Yeah, well, you're on all damn time.
I'm on all the time. I'm on all the damn time. And if you're in St. Louis or in Sacramento, you can hear me on the Odyssey app. 10 p.m. Eastern every damn night live. Just select really? WPHT in Philadelphia. Now, my friend Tony, what do you have to report?
I might be able to help you with this telephone problem you're having.
Yeah.
Because I think I had the same thing. They don't really like to run those lines for wired telephones anymore.
Right.
But what I did was, on your cable box, if you have cable TV, you can plug a landline right in there, and it's called voice over IP, voice over internet protocol. Works just like a landline. That's what I'm talking to you on right now.
It's a great connection. Do they know you've plugged in a phone?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And how much do they charge you for that?
Well, I have triple play from Comcast, so I have cable TV with a bunch of channels. I have the telephone and I have internet for $250 a month.
In my opinion, it's outrageous what they charge for VPN. I've looked into it, a VOPN or whatever that is. I've looked into it a couple times with a couple different companies, and I'm sorry, it's no bargain. Can you dial 911 on it?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, I can. I checked this out, Walter, before I called them.
Yeah.
And I said, I need a breakdown of these charges.
Right.
And the biggest charge was the internet, was $90 a month for the internet.
Yeah.
The cable TV was only like $55. And then you got all your federal taxes and all this other business added on. Right.
Tony, you're a good friend. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the advice. Thank you very much for calling Sterling every damn Sunday. It's 11:11 on the East Coast, 8:11 at KFBK in Sacramento. And there, please play their jingle. Too slow. Oh, my fault. I thought we were going to have a guest right now, but in my mind, it belongs here. Yet on the rundown, it says a different time. It says a different
don't
time.
Don't disrespect the pizza parlor.
I will try not to disrespect the pizza parlor. Good evening, Walter Sterling. Every damn Sunday night, there are many things I have planned. Let me just look at the list. Oh, yeah, let me tell you something spooky. So there's always this talk about how our cell phones listen to us all the time, right? That it can always hear us. It's always listening, even if it's off. Even if you and I turn off our cell phone, it can still hear us. And it can still generate ads and editorial for whatever it was we were talking about conveniently the next time we do turn on the phone, or the next time we go on Facebook or TikTok or Instagram to look at those pictures. Those pictures. On Friday, I'm talking to Bill White, program director of KFBK in Sacramento. Easily one of the 10 best program directors alive, now that I no longer do it. He's moved up to number 10. That was pretty funny. Sorry, Bill. And I'm talking to Bill White, and the good thing about talking to Bill White or Michael Harrison or any of these clowns is that we agree on all the big issues, and we leave the conversation thinking that we're brilliant, absolutely the greatest radio executives who ever lived. Well, now I'm talking to him, and I explain, you know, my in-laws live in a suburb of Cleveland, and in Cleveland there's a part of the road known as Dead Man's Curve, but nobody moves into Cleveland. And therefore, any references to local landmarks, businesses, whatever, they talk to each other about it. Everybody knows everything. There are no secrets to people who live in the Cleveland area. They all know every reference point, all of it, right? So I hear on the radio all the time in the traffic reports about Dead Man's Curve and a Dead Man's Curve and a Dead Man. And I'm like, I have no idea where it is. And gee, for some reason on the highways, it doesn't say anywhere Dead Man's Curve. Nowhere on the highway does it say that. That was the last conversation I had on that phone. Hang up, goodbye. The next day, I turn on my phone, and up pops an ad that shows Dead Man's Curve. It shows where Dead Man's Curve is, what it is, and it's an AI drawing. It's not a photo. It's an AI drawing of Dead Man's Curve. To look like what you and I would imagine a Dead Man's Curve looks like, I don't think it got it right. But whoa, like whoa. For years, maybe months, you heard the myth about how your new water meter, your electronic water meter, not the cool semi-mechanic one that was put in 1890, that the new water meters listen to your home. They actually listen to your home. I had on a guy who worked for that company that makes those water meters. I had on a guest who was somebody who works for that company. I asked him, I said, can the water meter listen to our home? Can it listen to the conversations of the home? Yes. What? Yes. It listens to see if people are home and then matches occupation of the home against water usage. And if there's way more or way less water uses versus who's in the home, they suspect somebody is stealing water from us. I said, what? And then he explained something. He said, they don't listen for hours. The meters don't. It listens for like 10 seconds just to hear if anybody's home and then matches it up against water usage. All right, I'm buying into that for about 8 seconds. And I started thinking it through. What do you mean it's only 8 seconds? But it could go longer. It could go longer. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night. Extra, extra, extra. Hear
all about it. Strippers on the loose. From the Daily Brief, exciting news site. On the X, yeah. A dancer, a 26-year-old that has not been identified, has apparently been picked up because her VIP room charges went way over the top. Generally, when you do the VIP room or you go to the champagne room, you go in and the dancer dances with you for a song or two. These are usually quick ditties, so you're looking at a max of 3 to 6 minutes. And, you know, who needs more than 30? So there you go. This gal went in, and apparently there's a tourist from out of town. And, she said, I'll give you a little extra time. And charged him on his card for $3,400 for that 15-minute dance. The dancer was adding lots of extra charges. A couple of notes when you go to a gentleman's club. This is even for a couple's dance, by the way. Always bring cash. Never give your American Express card to the dancers or to the club. Pay cash. Cash up front. Cash good. Tough to overcharge you when all you gotta do is have some cash. The dancer hauled in $3,400. And the gentleman began to realize he was being fleeced. He said, that's way too much money. And she goes, if you got a broke butt, don't come to Miami. Because we are expensive. The mugshot of this lady, pretty good. She's a hottie. Yeah, is she worth, you know, $3,400 for 15 minutes? Probably not. Because dancers all over the United States of America are beautiful. And you go even to the redneck club in the middle of nowhere, the dancers are a beautiful lot of lasses. Usually with daddy issues. Yeah, they got some daddy issues. So bring cash, ask for the price up front. Be careful if the, you know, if the bouncer's a real big goon. From the champagne room with a lot of cash in my pocket, I'm Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, JB Bakery, Salina and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Walter M. Sterling with the cast of JB Bakery, Salina, the head of marketing, Steve the baker, who's being phased out of management by Salina, and Father Jim Drucker, who has the best laugh in American radio and also the best timing in American radio. But the reason he has the best timing in American radio has nothing to do with the fact that he is a ordained Catholic priest and a captain in the Air Force. The reason he has the best timing in American radio is that he was a disc jockey on the greatest top 40 station there ever was. He was, we bow down to him. He was a disc jockey on WARM, which is in Scranton, which sort of diminishes what I just said. Let's just say Northeast Pennsylvania. Well, here you all are. Very exciting to have you on Sterling every damn night. And my question to you is, are you working out these management problems at the bakery that I have identified at a distance? And the management problems are that the baker is a brilliant baker. But, you know, with cows, thank God they're not in charge of advertising milk. And it's it's like that at the JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Salina, are you taking over? Are you taking charge of these things that Steve should view as beneath him?
Of course I am. You know, I'm a Jersey girl. I've got to just take charge wherever I see fit. I mean, if I think something needs to be done, it's got to be done the way that I want to do it. I mean, I used to be maybe a little bit, you know, less pushy with it just because it's his business and everything. But, you know, like you said, there's some problems that need to be addressed. I need to be in these videos. I spent the whole weekend baking Christmas cookies and, you know, we're getting ready to share another recipe with you tonight. So I think, you know, I need to be in videos sharing those with our audience on Instagram and Facebook.
You need to be more like Jumo.
Exactly.
Jumo, for the benefit of the people in Kansas City at KMBZ, Jumo, J-U-M-O. Now go look it up now on TikTok. Jumo shows us how to make pizza. And Salina at JB Bakery should be able to show us how to make Christmas cookies. And you have a recipe for Christmas cookies tonight? What is the recipe? What's it called?
It's pepperminty candy canes.
Oh, I have this. Terrific. Great idea. If you want the pepperminty candy cane cookies, send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I'll send it to you right away. It's free, no obligation. No one's going to bother you. Don't worry about it. It's my Christmas gift to you from JB Bakery and Selena. But did you guys, I'm shocked that you, head of marketing, did baking. Why did you do baking, Selena?
Well, Father Drucker will be happy to hear this. My church actually did a cookie swap, an annual cookie swap. So I had to impress all the little old ladies at my church and bake the best Christmas cookies that I could come up with to share with them.
That's wonderful. That's
and
wonderful.
Did you?
Well, they're all gone. Everybody took them. They were some of the first ones to go. So I think I was successful.
Yes. Congratulations. That's terrific. Now, Father Drucker, do you have any concerns about the morality in the bakery? Are there politics that are harming the workforce in the bakery?
Well, do you think before we go on, we should turn the water on so we can be heard? Can't be heard or can be heard? Everything is fine. It's wonderful. The children are just a knockout. Dylan, Ileana, Tommy. Dylan's a new hire. And Chris and George. They're marvelous. I really mean it, Walter. They're marvelous young people, and they love what they're doing. They really enjoy interfacing with the people that come in. And it's wonderful because everybody comes into a shop that their eyes are popping out of their heads looking at all these wonderful delicacies, the cookies and the cakes and the creme brulee. Look out, a knockout. Wonderful. And it's just a delight to be there, to be the official small M moocher, so we don't take that out of context.
Do they have Hanukkah cookies?
I don't. Oh, wait a minute. Gary O'Neill will be on me on this one. My God. Thank you. Thank you, Walter. Thank you so much for that.
Steve, do you have Hanukkah cookies?
The Hanukkah cookies are coming out this week. I make a nice blue dreidel sugar cutout cookie. So I'm on the ball with the Hanukkah cookies. I'm not going to pass up a holiday. An opportunity makes money, Walter.
Well, thank now, God, Kerry O'Neill will not be angry at me. Thank God.
Right, but this isn't a local show. So as a national show, have you gotten the business into the position that you can ship?
I've been doing shipping, like, what do you call it, as requested. Sometimes I get people emailing me, would you ship me something? I have that down. I'm happy to do that. If somebody sends me an email, Walter, sometimes you send me a request. I'm happy to ship that out. Do I have a full automated system to ship everything out? That's being built, you know, piece by piece.
No, that's
well,
better.
I can comment on that one, actually. The online menu that I've finished at this point and will be on our website shortly. So all of our menu items that are typically in store will be on an online menu that should be accessible from our website. And assuming there are no technological issues, that should work effectively to be able to order things and have them shipped out.
If you want something from JB Bakery for Christmas, send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com, and I will send it to them. And that way it will be a priority item because they know I will harass them if you don't get it right away. I think that's a good system. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. I'll send you the recipe for the cookies, and I'll send you anything you might want from JB Bakery. Walter M. Sterling every damn Sunday night.
Have a happy holiday from Sterling every damn night.
As you know, I'm fascinated by the tollway industry. And they have their own publication, which is the most frightening fact I could share with you about toll roads. It's called Tollway News. And Tollway News is packed every day. It's a daily, not a monthly as it should be. It's a daily where they have the latest ways that you and I are being screwed by the toll system. Now, I'm trying to find this one article about the main toll routes, which are very, very robust. They collect a lot of money in Maine, and it's wrong, because there should be no toll roads. There should be no toll roads. I will give this one more second till I find it, if I was prepared. Well, I am prepared. I actually had this ready, and then I couldn't print. Is there no greater hell that when you and I are confronted by a printer that will not recognize our computer, when I want to Wi-Fi the connection between, I can't find it, when I want to Wi-Fi the connection between my computer, my laptop, and my printer, it's random. Have you found this? That when you use the Wi-Fi, you know, it's very nice if you're in a fancy office and you can Ethernet the computers with the printers. That's great. Good for you. But for the rest of us, most of us, we use a Wi-Fi because we're all around our house or our office, and we want to be able to print from anywhere. What a great promise. One of the great promises of technology. You'll be able to print from everywhere. Won't that be great?
Don't disrespect the pizza parlor.
But you can't. 9 times out of 10, it says, can't find the printer. Looking for printer, can't find the printer. No printer to be found. Sometimes I've actually put my laptop or my iPhone on the printer, right on it, and I still get no printer to be found.
Don't disrespect the pizza parlor.
It's outrageous. Everybody loves their computer, and nobody likes their printer. With the multiple $1 trillion that Apple has in the bank, you know, they have the biggest cash reserves of any corporation in the world. Until 1989, Apple made a printer. They made a couple. They made an inkjet printer and they made a laser printer. They were one of the first to make a laser printer. It weighed as much as a Volkswagen, and it was shaped pretty much like a Volkswagen. It worked just fine. And then they stopped making printers because they realized that all of the complaints that they were getting were about the printers, not about the computers. Things seemed to be going fine with the computers. People like their computers. People love their Macs. But boy, when it got to the printers, they hated their printers. We still hate our printers. I pity any industry like Canon. And otherwise, you know, Canon was a respected, wonderful company. My favorite cameras were Canon cameras. My very favorite. And then they decided to make printers. And now the printers are in the same trash heap with all the other printers. We hate them. And the way I think they figured it out was, all right, we'll only charge $50 for the printer. And like Gillette, we'll make our money with the blades. We'll make our money with the ink. Well, they sure are. $50 to $60 for an ink cartridge for a Canon printer. And amazingly, when I spend the $50 or $60 for an ink cartridge with a Canon printer, suddenly the printer works. Isn't that amazing? Suddenly it works. Well, I couldn't print out any of this stuff for the show tonight. Couldn't print it out. Let's talk about evil malls and the misery of Christmas. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And like I mentioned, today is the official Pretend You're a Time Traveler Day. Pretend You're a Time Traveler Day. And there are two things that I'd want to do as a time traveler. Two things. I'd want to meet Yvette Mimieux in the time machine, as you would. And I'd want to be at the pyramids in Egypt the day they lay the first block. And I want to be able to see, what the hell are they doing? What is the plan for this? You're in the middle of the desert. Nobody lives here. They're in the desert. Nobody lives there. Cairo wasn't built yet. And they decide to build these insane pyramids. One of the reasons why I don't think our current culture has been able to figure out exactly how they build the pyramids is because you and I cannot imagine a world where that's all the population had to do. They had a big problem. They had thousands and thousands of young men who had nothing else to do. Thousands and thousands of young men who were not at war, had no industry, had no iPhones, and all sorts of wacky religious rules about sexo. And they had to dissipate all of that energy. Hi, here are 4-ton blocks. Figure out how to get them in line. Line them up perfectly. Take as much time as you want. No limit on it. We'll feed you. We'll give you these nice clay houses. What could be better in 100-degree heat than a clay house. Here are these nice clay houses. You get all the food you want. We'll make sure you have food. There's the Nile. You want to go for a swim? No problem. You just have to move these four-ton blocks into perfect order at the exact center of the Earth, 1 degree longitude, 1 degree latitude. You have to line it up with Orion, with Orion's belt. You see up there, there's Orion's belt. Line everything up. That's why I'd like to be a time traveler. Is there a reason you'd like to be a time traveler? Perhaps something in life that you would like to correct. If there's one thing in life that you could correct, what would it be? If there's one thing in life I could correct, it would all be centered around real estate. Yes, I'd buy the townhouse in Greenwich Village for $50,000 in 1975. I know this for a fact. There was a loft in Soho. This is when these were artist lofts, light industry lofts. It was not gentrified. There were no bathrooms in these buildings. There was no central air in these buildings. There was just really strong light industry buildings built in 1890. Incredible infrastructure of these buildings, steel frame, beautiful buildings. And they were used for light industry and hats and making sewing machines and all that. And then that slowly moved out, and the result was 10 and 15,000 square foot open spaces with 3 foot floating floors. Empty. Nobody wanted them. They would have to be designed, redesigned, and reconfigured to get a certificate of occupancy to live in. You had to put in bathrooms and a certain type of circuitry, certain type of electricity. It was a lot of money to make them livable, but gee, you could get a 10,000 square foot loft in Soho for $13,000. I know for a fact a couple that got one for $13,000. And I was so dumb. At the time, I'm thinking, I don't know how you do that. How do you get a mortgage? I didn't know. And the problem with my head is it didn't occur to me to ask somebody. My dad was the head of capital acquisitions for Bell Telephone Laboratory. He could have explained to me exactly how to get a mortgage. It just didn't occur to me to ask. But that's why I want a time machine. Why do you want a time machine? It's National Pretend You're a Time Traveler Day. Here's my phone number, live at 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn Sunday.
The people of Walmart, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling, Colorado. Yes, Sterling. Yes, Sterling, a famous place in Colorado. All sorts of fun. If you've not spent time in Colorado, it is one of my favorite states. I love it. And I know right here on Sterling Every Damn Night, we appreciate all of our listeners in Colorado, especially Sterling. Feller was behind the Ice Lanes bowling alley. Late Thursday night, officers were conducting a search because, yeah, somebody saw someone that may be a trespasser. They pick the guy up, and what do they find out? They find out that, number one, he was up to no good. Number two, that he had a warrant for shoplifting at Walmart. Walmart! Largest corporation in the world. Now, what was so frightening about this guy is that, well, they found illegal drugs on him. They didn't say what kind of drugs, but seemingly it probably was either meth or trank or heroin, mainly because he was dumpster diving. He was looking for any type of way to get some extra money. And at the bowling alley, he didn't roll a strike. He was the prize. He was the prize. Yeah, and they also found a lot of knives on him. The one thing about police officers, what cops don't like, and I don't care where you are in this great land of ours, or anywhere in the sound of my voice, they don't like it if you have weapons and you don't declare them up front. Or if you pull them out, if you brandish them. Yeah, that's not good. This feller's lucky he's still alive. The police department in Sterling says this: trespassing at local businesses will get you removed and possibly arrested if you add in warrants, weapons, or drugs. Or all three. This guy had this warrant for a Walmart. He apparently was a shoplifter who had gotten picked up and charged and then didn't report to jail. Didn't report to the county office. That's not good. Even if you're innocent. If all of a sudden they're after you, get an attorney. That's what they're all about. Yeah, get a good criminal defense attorney. Don't get a public defender. Public defender's bad. They usually do a not so good of a job. Find someone you pay for, and they'll help you get free. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool, Sterling, every damn night.
It's the holiday season on Sterling every damn night.
Patty in Maine, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday.
Hi, Mr. Sterling. I just want to say I enjoy your show immensely. You are very, very good. But I have to disagree with you on one point tonight. You said you hate, you know, who hates their computer? I do.
Really?
What kind do you have? I think computers are the downfall of people. Social media? I mean, these young people, they live on their phones and their computers. And I think it's taken away from personal one-to-one contact. Everything's email, email. I hate it.
Now, Patsy.
And I'm 75 years old.
Yes, I believe you are, because every caller over 60 insists on telling me their age. Why is that? People who are 20 never say, and I'm 28, and I'm 28.
I'm not ashamed of being 75.
But I didn't ask you how old you were. It has nothing to do with your opinion, which is just fine. Your opinion is fine.
Some people think because you're older and elderly, you don't like, you know, you don't like the modern technology. That's why I say that.
But there's no difference.
A lot of people my age don't want a computer. Don't want nothing to do with them.
Because they're afraid to learn them.
Because I live in a retirement home, so I know very well.
But well, here's news. Patty, listen to me. Here's news. The Maine Turnpike Authority reported that Thanksgiving holiday traffic volume reached a record high this year. More than a million people transaction between on the Maine Turnpike between Wednesday and Sunday. Over a million people. That represents almost 2% annual growth. It's returned now to the level again before the pandemic. But there should be no toll. See, they're all excited that their tolls are back up to where it was before the pandemic, Patty. But there should be no tolls. These roads were built years ago. They've been paid off years ago. These are just the crooks taking money that they didn't. These are the money changers in the temple, Patty. These are criminals taking money that they didn't earn, they don't earn. Isn't that worth getting more excited about than who uses a computer?
True. But I just said, like you said, people, you know, don't hate their computers. That's not all accurate.
Well, the computer gives them pleasure, as you just pointed out, social media. And they definitely hate their printer. Guaranteed they hate their printer, don't you think?
I don't.
You don't? Your printer?
No.
You know what you are?
I love it.
You know what you are? You are a midnight misfit, and that's why you belong here. And thank you for listening to Sterling every damn Sunday night. Thank you, Patty. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. The reason that Patty could call is this is a live show on WGAN in Maine, run by Phil Zachary. Phil runs WGAN. What? Yeah, he used to run, what was that station he ran in Raleigh? WRAL. He used to run WRAL, which should air this show. They should be airing this show. They could only do better. But now Phil is running WGAN, and it is doing better because Phil is running WGAN. Just like Alan First is running KMBZ, and that's why that station's doing better. I've explained to you the dynamics of all of American radio. You need about 10 people to run things. Nancy Odney at KFGO. She used to run KFGO in Fargo. One of the five best general managers I've ever known, which proves what? It doesn't matter how big the city is. You can have greatness anywhere. That is my Christmas message to you. Even if you are suffering running a TV or radio station in Syracuse, you can still excel. You can still shine. You don't have to be in a top 10 city. You just have to be in a top 10 city to actually get paid. I think I've explained all of American media now. Oh, the MSNBC people, the whoever owns NBC now, Universal, whatever, they've now are announcing which channels they're going to dump. Good for you. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control, Dave Smart.
Now, Dave, who's with us almost every night with Spaced Out Radio news reports. Dave, according to TikTok, you had some event on December 2nd that I don't think you promoted on this show. What was this event?
Oh, the December 2nd. I have to go back on my TikTok and look now. I mean, that was 5 days ago, my friend, 6 days ago.
Well, Christian McLeod, The Experience. What was that?
Yes.
What was that?
Well, Christian McLeod is a good friend of mine from ACAPS, which is American Cryptid and Paranormal Society. He's based out of the Appalachian Mountains in Asheville, North Carolina. We were talking about some of the weird dogman sightings that have been happening around there, because for some unknown reason in the cryptid world, people aren't seeing as many Sasquatch right now. And over the last couple of months, there has been an increase of sightings in werewolves right across North America. Now, why this is happening, we don't know. These cryptid creatures seem to go in patterns where for a few years it'll be, you know, paranormal will be all the excitement, and then UFOs will be all the excitement, and then Bigfoot will be all the excitement. And we seem to be in a trend right now where people, just ordinary people like you and me, Walter, or maybe I'm not ordinary, but, you know, are seeing these werewolf-like beings.
You know, you did mention it. You did discuss it. Was this a successful the December 2nd broadcast?
Of course. Of course it was. Christian's a fun guy. I've got the opportunity to speak with him twice at the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference, and he's just an amazing guy.
Dave Scott, what do you have to report to us tonight on Sterling every damn Sunday?
One of the biggest mysteries in United States military history. 80 years ago, Walter, if you remember, because this, everybody knows this story, but I'm going to recap it for everybody. 80 years ago today, you know, Lieutenant Charles Taylor took five planes on a naval test flight from Pensacola down into the Gulf area to start testing out some torpedoes. After a couple of hours into the mission, things started getting a little strange. All of a sudden, their compasses were not working. Electronics on their airplanes weren't working. The ocean was not looking the same. And a couple hours after, around 7 p.m. Eastern time, all of a sudden, the planes vanished, all five of them. And this is a giant mystery to this day, because nobody has ever found the planes that happened to disappear in the Bermuda Triangle that night. Now, on the rescue side, where they sent up a couple of Mars Mariner and Martin bombers, bombers, I think they were, they eventually turned into water bombers. They sent them looking for these aircraft. They could not find them. They ended up losing another plane to the conditions, and the conditions for flying were great, but it just vanished. It just disappeared, just like the other five. In total, excuse me, in total, 27 men disappeared off of those planes, never to be seen again. Now, up until this day, there have been many crews and documentaries and ocean-bearing researchers looking for these missing airplanes. They've never found them. They don't know what happened. Of course, the mystery of the Bermuda Triangle, where weird things seem to happen and disappear, and ships disappearing in airplanes, is no mystery to many people. But to this day, the United States Navy still has no recollection of what happened on that fateful day 80 years ago.
An amazing story. Do you have a theory about this, Dave? Do you have a theory as to what happened?
Oh, goodness. Look, there are these weird triangles all over the world. Just in North America, you have the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts. You have the Alaskan Triangle up in Alaska, where people seem to vanish. The Bermuda Triangle. And it's thought that maybe, just maybe, there's some sort of time slip or portals or crossing dimensions that just seem to have some sort of high strangeness about them, where everybody in the area, people, airplanes, technology, just seem to disappear. Now, Alaska seems to me a little bit more easier to explain because it is so rugged, and with the way the mountains and the snowpacks and the glaciers are in that area, I mean, they could eat up anybody and anything at any time. But in these triangle type areas, we see a lot of monsters in those areas, whether it's sea monsters at sea and large sharks or thunderbirds or any type of weird creatures seem to be in these areas that are not supposed to exist. So where these planes went, I have no idea. Maybe they went into a different dimension. Maybe they entered a portal. Maybe they are somewhere in the ocean and the undercurrent swept those planes away hundreds of miles into the depths that we will never find. I have no clue what happened to them.
But do you have a clue as to where Midnight Misfits can buy a Spaced Out Radio t-shirt with my image on it?
Oh, I got that. If you go to spacedoutradio.com, you go under the shop tab, that takes you right to our store. And if you scroll through, because we do not have any ugly swag, you'll be happy to wear anything of ours. You can actually go in there, scroll on down until you find the Midnight Misfits Walter M. Sterling shirt. Walter, the captain of this show, is flying the UFO that says Sterling every damn night on it. And we'd love to see the Misfits take a picture once they get it and send it to us so we can see it.
And how do we hear your show?
SpacedOutRadio.com, best place to hear us on any major podcast network, or subscribe to us on YouTube.
Dave Scott, Spaced Out Radio, Sterling every damn Sunday.
It's the holiday season on Sterling every damn night.
All right, now if you go to TikTok to WM Sterling, search WM Sterling, you will see my very first holiday video, WM Sterling. You will see the Sterling Town Square display. The town square that we have outside our building, the Sterling building, you will see a video of the display that we have put up. It's spectacular. It's unique. WM Sterling. That's my TikTok name, WM Sterling. And I'll be posting a new video every day, a new holiday video every day through the season. You will love it. You will be impressed with the display that we have established in our town square outside the Sterling building. On TikTok is the only place you can see it. WM Sterling. Now, let me talk about these horrible malls that have ruined Christmas, but they have gotten what they deserve. They're being closed. Mall after mall is being shuttered. And it's really spooky. They're just closed. There's still electricity in them and air conditioning, and many of the stores are viable. Some of them have functioning movie theaters, but most of the stores are closed, and they have just closed these malls, huge, newish malls throughout the country. What is it that they all have in common? Most of these malls have done the most corrupt thing, in my opinion, that any business can do. They have charged for your kids to see Santa Claus rather than be smart and make it not only possible to see Santa for free, but to make it a destination. You know that starting December 1st, every kid wants to go to the mall and see Santa. What does that mean? It means the mall's going to get tons of business. Those carts in the mall, those terrific carts run by brilliant entrepreneurs, hardworking entrepreneurs, though that's a tough business. You rent one of those carts, which you can rent for like $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month. Oh, yes. And then you have to give a kick of your sales to the mall just to have one of those carts in the hallway in the mall. All of the stores benefit from Santa Claus being there. You have to bring your kid to the mall. They have to see Santa, and then you're at the mall. You're going to go to the food court. What are you going to buy at the food court? Bourbon chicken. Why? Bourbon chicken does not exist anyplace outside of the food court at a mall. No Chinatown in America has a food court with bourbon chicken. Bourbon chicken is not a known Chinese item. You could travel all of China and never find bourbon chicken, ever. You could travel to any Chinatown in America and never find bourbon chicken, ever. Every store benefits from a terrific Santa, a good, well-kept, well-costumed Santa, every store. And what do these idiots do? The one thing that America deserves is a nice Santa Claus in their local mall. Those 8-year-olds, they deserve a nice Santa Claus in their local mall. And what happens? You take your 8-year-old there, and you start to get in line to see Santa, and they say, oh no, you had to reserve a time to see Santa, and it's $25. What? You had to reserve a time to see Santa, and it's $25. Well, it's 2:00. When is Santa gone? 5. Well, then I'll reserve a time between now and 5. What time's available? None. You have to reserve it for tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. There might be some time, and it's $25. I have 3 children. That'll be $75. I have to pay $75 for my 3 kids to sit on Santa's lap. Yes. Do you want pictures with Santa? Well, the packages start at $40. You want a package of photos with Santa? That starts at $40. Now, if I put up my phone to take that picture, a man in uniform will say, you cannot take a photo. That set, this is how they do it, that set that he's sitting on is copyrighted. They make a fancy throne for Santa, fancy blankets around him, fake snow around him, and they say that that's copyrighted. That's BS. That is the biggest scam. You're telling me that mall went through the trouble of copywriting a set for Santa? Good luck. Have you ever tried to get anything officially copyrighted? I didn't say filed for the copyright. I said actually copyrighted. You have to prove usage in multiple media for multiple months with multiple examples. Good luck. You think a mall's going to do that? The same mall crying about the fact they're not making any money? You think they're going to spend $5,000, $6,000, $10,000 to copyright Santa's set? No, they're not. Don't be stupid. The whole thing's stupid. Any city, any town that has a mall should pass an ordinance that says, if you want a certificate of occupancy, you cannot charge anybody to see Santa. You cannot charge anybody to sit on Santa's lap. What a crime. That's what they need money from? That's it? I'll tell you how a mall could make much more money and solve their mall problem. Number one, concierge service. I pull up to the mall, somebody parks my car. And then when I'm ready to go, I hit this pager, I hit this phone number or this text, and a beefy kid comes, meets me at the store, carries out my bags. What will happen? Well, if a beefy kid is going to carry out my bags to my car, which is at the curb, I'll buy more stuff because I don't have to lug it around. The beefy kid will bring it to my car and I'll buy more stuff. That'll be great. That's terrific. Number two, when I step into the mall, there need to be strollers there for the toddler. I cannot carry the toddler around easily, but if I have a stroller, a nice stroller, and can push it around, well, then the toddler's happier, I'm happier, and what? I'll buy more stuff. And then by every food court at every mall in America, there's a large open area where many people are supposed to be sitting and they're not. Convert that open area to a demonstration area and bring in local chefs on a scheduled, rotating basis to demonstrate their best dishes, show me how to make those dishes, project that on those big screens that are all over the mall, make it an event, bring in the local chefs, have them show me how to make their best dishes, and oh gee, right there, sell me cookingware, right there. Now I can see the chef using it. I can see how to use it. And I'll buy it. Instead, they have big open areas with benches, tables that nobody uses because nobody's sitting there anymore. And put in more utilities. Make it more of a town square. Bring in the United Parcel, the FedEx, a post office. Bring in all of those things, a shoe repair place, and a general grinder, that guy who knows how to sharpen knives and scissors. Bring that here. Let me see that. Oh, and some of the malls have had the carts that repair my phone, that can repair the screen on my phone. Make sure those are there. I want the cart that repairs my phone. Now, am I a retailer? No, I'm barely a talk show host. But if I can come up with these ideas, I'll bet you real retailers can come up with these ideas and make those malls work. Instead, they're running away like hell and going, oh, Amazon's doing it. No, you're charging kids to sit on Santa's lap. Amazon doesn't do that. That's why you've lost business, because you have ticked off an entire generation of parents with young kids. You bring them to the mall to sit on Santa's lap, and you get stuck with a $100 bill and come back tomorrow. What a bunch of jerks. What a bunch of drips run those malls. And then they want to keep teens out? No teens after 7 o'clock. No. No, the lifeblood of the mall are those teens. Those teens are your customers not a couple years from now, tomorrow. They're going to be your customers tomorrow. But they can't come in there without a parent. What fun that is, to come with your parent to the mall. Fantastic idea. Great for socializing. Great for meeting the one. That's stupid. They have done it to themselves. Those malls destroyed the gestalt, the societal aspects of the mall. They have ruined them. That's why those malls are dying. It's not Amazon. It's their own stupidity. Just dumb as could be. There's the audience. There's the perfect environment. Let's do everything to scare them away. Good going. Good going, Mr. Mall. Brilliant work. Walter M. Sterling, every damn night.
Happy holidays from Sterling every damn night.
It's all right.
Yes, that's right. It's the Somalia National Anthem. Where the people of Somalia meet and celebrate the fact that about a third of the women are married before they turn 18. About a third of the women in Somalia are married before they turn 18. And the two biggest populations are teenagers and then people like over 50. In the middle, they're all gone because the unemployment rate is 38-40% in most of the demographics. I was fascinated about the fact that I keep having to hear about Somalia, right? And I thought, well, let me find out about it. If you want to move to Somalia, odds are you'll stay unemployed. You have to learn to speak Arabic, and you got to hang out there for 7 years before you can become a citizen. Wow. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I got a great website. It's Walter Sterling Show. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Come with me to Sunset Park Elementary School in Windermere, where an 11-year-old Florida fifth grader is taking a stand. School is resumed, but according to this report on WFLA, not all masks are created equal.
The principal told me it was deemed offensive to women and inappropriate.
All right, look, we all get it. It's kind of weird to have an 11-year-old with a reference to women's sexual parts covering his mouth all day in a school setting. But damn it, the Constitution doesn't make exceptions for crappy restaurant chains. This kid is standing up not just for his rights, but for your rights and mine. While the rest of us just do what Big Brother tells us and scurry around hoping we don't get in trouble. This is a real American taking a stand for the freedom of speech. And yeah, it's a little creepy that he loves a restaurant chain, but who am I to judge?
We go there as a family. We eat there. I mean, our favorite thing there is what, the chocolate cake?
Yeah,
they have the best chocolate cakes.
The chocolate cake, huh? That's not why I usually go to Hooters, but I guess there's some people that also read Playboy for the articles. Hold my beer.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
For our next Florida story, we go to Dania Beach, Florida, where one of the big draws is the beach. But there's a lot of competition for beaches up and down Florida. I mean, the whole thing's a beach, pretty much. So the city council appropriated a big chunk of money to get a big, bright new sign. The other sign just wasn't cutting it. It was old. It was small. But this one's going to be huge. It's going to be colorful. And it is. It looks great. It really pops. It's right by the main highway, right in the middle of a beautiful beach. Just one problem. It's actually in Hollywood Beach. They put it in the wrong spot. No one's fessing up to why. So don't ask. I don't know. Maybe someone just put the wrong address into Google Maps or whatever.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
For our next Florida story, we go to Pensacola, where they have a 3-mile bridge, if you've never been in that area, over Pensacola Bay. It's a massive, jarring, huge structure. You can't miss it, this bridge. And in 2010, it was ruled to be structurally deficient. So $430 million worth of taxpayer money was thrown at getting it up to code. It was recently reopened earlier this year, and Hurricane Sally ends up knocking off a giant chunk of it. Yes, the bridge was sustaining all these other previous hurricanes, but once it's air quotes fixed, it falls apart the next time it's challenged. No, that's not suspicious at all. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
For our next Florida story, we're going to Deltona, Florida, where a cop who has a very cool job got an alert on his phone while he was up in his police helicopter. This wasn't a text from his wife telling him to get something at the grocery store on the way home. He actually has an alert system on his car that tells him it's been broken into. So the Ring camera alert to the helicopter pilot also tells him where his car is. So he goes, puts a spotlight on his car, and leads deputies right to him. But what bum luck of all the cars you're going to rob in Deltona, Florida. You're robbing the one that has the alert system to the police helicopter that's already flying above your head. It's almost poetic. For Florida, that's poetry. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our last Florida story today, you're going to meet a new hero. Goes by the name of Edith. She's a school teacher in Boca Raton, and she is not impressed with the behavior of the parents in the background of the Zoom classrooms.
Parents, please make sure that you have on proper clothing when you're walking in front or behind the child's computer, because we done seen them in their drawers, the bra, and everything else. Parents, when you're helping your children at the computer, please do not appear with big joints in your hands and cigarettes. Does joint be big as a cigar? Oh, yes, we done seen it all.
These are all legitimate complaints, but I have a feeling the teachers aren't that shocked. They probably had to drive past 3 alligators, a homeless guy on bath salts, and 2 dead bodies on their way to work today. You can't tell me a Florida teacher is going to be shocked to see some fat guy in his drawers.
Wait. Hold my beer. What?
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Walter Sterling.
Sterling.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen. Alizira turned toward me, placing her hands on my chest. You're not upset? No, why would I be? With one finger, I tilted her chin upward to meet my gaze, the moonlight reflected in her emerald eyes. Regardless, if this is all part of who you are, then I look forward to everything you're willing to share with me. Her eyes closed as I leaned down. I brushed my lips across hers with the faintest of touches, afraid if I pushed too far, she'd be summoned away again. No one appeared to interrupt us, and the gentle gesture paved the way for a more zealous kiss. She slid her palms over my shoulders, locking her fingers behind me, and her lips parted to welcome me inside. The sweet taste of honeyed wine on her tongue drove me wild with desire. I tightened my grasp on her waist, pressing her body to mine. As I explored her luscious mouth, I threaded my free hand through her thick curls. When I grazed the bare skin at the base of her neck, she shuddered. "Stay with me tonight," she purred against me in between kisses. "I want to be with you." My heart thudded until I thought it might explode. I couldn't believe what I'd heard. "Are you sure? We haven't known each other for very long, and I don't want you to think I..." "I know all I need to know about you, Caleb." Her fists knotted in the collar of my shirt, and her hips rolled toward me. And when I shivered in the corner of my cold, terrible cell, thoughts of you kept me warm. I imagined what it would be like to be safe in your arms, to feel your body touching mine. She traced the edge of the shirt, her fingertips leaving a blazing trail across my skin. And I wondered if you thought the same things about me. Her words aroused all sorts of provocative memories. I did. Believe me, I did. I took her hand and kissed the top of it. I suppose it's in poor taste to refuse a queen's invitation in her own castle. Alizira tossed her head back and laughed, a wide grin spreading over her face. "Let's go inside. The view from the balcony will be even more spectacular at sunrise." A jumble of feelings, from disbelief to red-hot lust, clouded my mind as I followed her back through the doors. Inside her chambers, she used an iron rod to stoke the embers inside a fireplace. Once she had rekindled the flames, she walked the perimeter of the room, extinguishing all the lamps hanging from the walls. When the last of the light came from the dancing fire, she stood in front of it and beckoned to me. I walked slowly, taking in the sight of her exaggerated hourglass figure silhouetted against the orange blaze. Alizira reached for the bottom of my shirt and gave it a yank. Grateful the darkness camouflaged some of my nervous blushing, pulled off the lightweight garment and let it flutter away. Before it hit the floor, she swanned back into my arms and guided me down for another kiss. The heat emanating from the hearth mingled with the fervor building between us. as her chest flattened against me, the plush fabric of her dress rubbed across my bare skin, teasing me with what lay beneath. Without relinquishing control of her lips, I skimmed my palms over the swell of her hips, drawing them up her sides and to the front of her body. Pliant flesh bulged over the top of her snug bodice, begging for attention. I cupped it through the thick velvet, and a soft moan escaped from her mouth into mine. She steered me toward the ties holding her bodice in place. I unfastened the knot, and the weight of her chest helped me loosen the laces. Dipping my hands inside the open flaps, I slid the gown off her shoulders. She pulled away to slip her arms out of the sleeves, and the dress cascaded off her body. Carefully, she stepped out of the burgundy puddle, removing her embroidered slippers as she did so. The roaring blaze in the fireplace bathed her in an ethereal glow, exposing every inch of her to me. Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen, which is available at Amazon. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website, waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Music director Lee Harris, technical wizard Dave Scalish, operations Frank Canal, sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres, voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Dan and Becky Gaffney, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brook and Matus Bumball, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Quantum Physics Dave Scott, a Canadian, Ross Coulthart, an Australian, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero, Long-suffering executives David Yadgroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.
A great way to